Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Biden administration wants to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug. And Columbia University threatens to expel pro-Palestinian student protesters who took over a campus building.
They want the university to stop interacting with companies who do business in Israel.
Plus, the founder of Binance, the largest crypto firm in the world, has been sentenced to 4 months in jail. It's Tuesday, April 30th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The Biden administration is working on a plan to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug, people familiar with the matter said, in what would be a potentially historic move that could make it much easier to buy and sell pot. The reclassification also has the potential to make the multi-billion-dollar industry more profitable. Biden allies hope the move will shore up the president's standing with younger voters who have been particularly supportive of liberalizing marijuana policies. Sources said Justice Department officials plan to submit a proposal for White House review that would move marijuana out of the government's most restrictive drug classification. It's been designated a Schedule I drug since 1970, alongside LSD and heroin. Pot would remain illegal under federal law without other changes from Congress. A New York judge has fined Donald Trump $9,000 and threatened to jail him for repeatedly violating a gag order restricting him from making public statements about potential witnesses in his first criminal trial. Prosecutors had alleged Trump violated the order in recent posts on his social media site and campaign website. Trump's accused of 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels ahead of the 2016 election. The judge's decision to issue the fine came before the trial resumed today. Trump has criticized the gag order and others imposed by other courts as an unfair muzzling of his political speech. Meanwhile, Trump has made his first public comments on the plight of our colleague Evan Gerskovich. In an interview with Time magazine published today, Trump said, quote, "The reporter should be released and he will be released." Gerskovich was detained in Russia on March 29, 2023, while doing his job as a journalist. He's being held on an allegation of espionage that he, the journal, and the U.S. government vehemently deny. The State Department has declared Gerskovich wrongfully detained, and President Biden has promised his family he would bring him home. The Russian embassy in Washington didn't immediately respond to a request for comment today. The Federal Trade Commission is challenging hundreds of pharmaceutical patent listings to encourage more affordable alternatives to brand-name drugs. Health reporter Liz Essley-White explains.
Drugs come with a lot of patents, and by law, they're supposed to be listed, at least some of them, in what's known as the Orange Book. And this is a system that helps facilitate generic drug development, actually. But the FTC is saying there's a bunch of patents listed in the Orange Book that don't need to be there, and what they end up doing is delaying generic competition and thus keeping prices high. The FTC is going after some diabetes drugs and some inhalers in this round of attacks on what it's calling junk patent listings. So the drugs impacted include diabetes drugs such as Ozempic and Victoza, big blockbuster drugs, and a lot of inhaler patents that are what the FTC is saying is going to hold up generic competition if they don't get removed.
The FTC issued letters to 10 companies today, warning them their patent listings were invalid. The companies didn't immediately respond to requests for comment. In the past, companies have questioned the agency's patent challenges, saying they listed their patents because the law requires it, and that doing so helps generic companies know what they're up against as they strategize on when to launch products. In Seattle, billionaire Shengpeng Zhao, founder of Binance, the world's biggest cryptocurrency exchange, has been sentenced to 4 months in jail. The punishment was lighter than prosecutors who hoped to send a message about crime in the industry had requested. The sentence was the culmination of a multi-year U.S. crime investigation into Binance. The investigation showed how U.S. law enforcers have targeted the national security and money laundering risks posed by cryptocurrencies. Amazon reported record first quarter sales after the bell today. The artificial intelligence boom powered growth in its cloud computing unit and helped the company continue shaking off last year's post-pandemic slump. Revenue rose 13% to reach $143.3 billion, an all-time high in the January to March period. Profit surged to $10.4 billion. Sales in the Amazon Web Services cloud computing arm, a critically important profit center for the company, increased more than 17%. And Walmart, the nation's largest grocer, is planning to introduce a private label of premium foods. The move is likely to rankle food manufacturers already fighting for space on Walmart's shelves. The brand, Better Goods, will include more than 300 items like oat milk ice cream and gluten-free muffin mix in a bid to attract new, often higher-income shoppers. It's a strategic bet that Wall Street Journal retail reporter Sarah Nassauer says comes amid fierce store brand competition.
A lot of retailers like the Kroger's, certainly like Aldi, are introducing and have already introduced private label premium food. And Walmart now is saying, okay, it's time for us to get better at this. It's an acknowledgement that what they were doing wasn't quite working, but that this is the time to sort of strike while the iron is hot because people are still looking to save money. People are getting more adventurous when it comes to flavors in America. That continues, and they want a piece of that pie.
Coming up, pro-Palestinian protesters at American universities are demanding schools divest from companies doing business with Israel. But is that workable? That's after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Columbia University has threatened to expel students who took over an academic building as it sought to end its standoff with pro-Palestinian student protesters. New York City reporter Aaron Aylworth spoke about the ongoing protests with my colleague Pierre Bien-Aimé.
Aaron, you're just outside the university with eyes on that occupied part of campus. What's the situation?
So the situation is that access to campus is pretty locked down today. Only students who live on campus and essential workers are being allowed in, and everyone else is not. And this is coming after students occupied Hamilton Hall, an academic building, just after midnight last night, and unfurled banners claiming it as Heinz Hall, in honor of a six-year-old who was killed, and saying that, you know, they are going to stay there until Columbia meets their demands.
And what are those demands right now, Aaron?
You know, those demands are encapsulated in a chant that you hear almost every day here, which is disclose, divest. They want the university to stop interacting with companies who do business in Israel.
That was New York City reporter Aaron Aylworth. And as Aaron mentioned, students at Columbia University and other colleges are making a specific demand: divestment. Schools including Columbia University, New York University, and Yale University have responded to that with a resounding no. Our reporter Juliet Chung, who covers money and power, joins us now. Juliet, universities divesting from business with Israel, how would that even work?
You know, it's a much more complicated question than it would have been if we were talking about this a few decades ago. Endowments used to be pretty straightforward. They held a mix of stocks and bonds. But in the last few decades, they've gotten much more complex. They primarily farm out their money to money managers. And so schools themselves typically don't hold positions in companies, but they'll have money with private equity managers, real estate managers, hedge funds, the list goes on and on. And oftentimes, those money managers have a lot of discretion in terms of what they invest in within certain parameters. So the idea of divesting from Israel, it's tricky and this is inelegant, but Israel is not an asset class in the way that private equity or stocks or real estate are. And so being able to divorce an endowment's holdings from any exposure to Israel would be tricky and probably take years, assuming that a school and an endowment would even want to proceed down that path. And that is a big if.
In the past, we've seen universities divest from certain areas like apartheid South Africa or more recently fossil fuels. Why today would this be a different kind of challenge?
Well, that's a great question. We've certainly seen student protesters have success in past decades with divestment calls in terms of divesting related to apartheid, relating to fossil fuel companies. What's a little trickier here is that the way that endowments manage money has grown a lot more complicated over the past decades. So it's not as simple as, you know, University X deciding within this next quarter, we're going to sell our $300 million of stock in these companies that are based in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. It's much more complicated than that. But beyond that, there's the question of political will. For things like apartheid and fossil fuels, there generally is widespread consensus about either the immorality of apartheid or of fossil fuel companies' contribution to global warming. Here, there's nowhere near anything approaching consensus on the war in Gaza.
What would be the effect of universities divesting from companies that do business with Israel if a school did heed the students' demands?
I think that's really hard to say, but there are sort of divided camps of thinking when it comes to the effectiveness of divesting. When you divest, you effectively sell your exposure from whatever area you're talking about. And so if we're talking about a fossil fuel company, then the investor would get out of that company. They'd give up their seat as a shareholder, which many people say is actually the most effective position from which to try to influence corporate policy. And so there are some endowments in the past, Yale with regards to fossil fuels, for example, that have said, you know, we actually think it's more effective to stay engaged and try to create change from the inside of these companies.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Juliet Chung.
Before we go, we want to hear from you about the green transition. Some of the subsidies that boosted solar panels and EVs are going away. So what questions do you have about the economics of going green? If you took advantage of subsidies, has it paid off? And if you haven't, what would get you to? To weigh in, send a voice memo to WNPOD@WSJ.com or leave a voicemail with your name and location at 212-416-4328. We might use it on the show. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé with supervising producer Michael Cosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning.